Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
New York State lawmakers are considering holding a special session before the end of the year to vote on a pay raise for themselves. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Pay increases have always been a controversial subject for lawmakers to tackle. As a result, senators and assembly members who now earn a base salary of $110,000 a year have seen few raises in the past couple of decades. A pay commission in 2018 recommended that lawmakers' base pay, then $79,500 a year, be increased to $130,000 by 2021. But only the first phase, which brought their salaries to the current $110,000 in 2019, was carried out. The final two phases were struck down in court. Legislators are allowed to vote for salary increases, but it can't apply to the current office holders, only to future terms. So, senators and assembly members could vote by the end of 2022 to raise salaries beginning with the next term. That begins in January of 2023. Since the vast majority of the 213 lawmakers are incumbents who were reelected, most would benefit from the decision. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says he's in favor of a salary increase.
Personally, I believe that legislators need to be, compensated for the hard work that they do. People don't realize that the sacrifice that they make being away from their families.
It's a long-held Albany tradition, though, for lawmakers not to directly confirm that they are planning on voting on a pay raise. When asked if a special session is happening, Hastie hedged.
This moment, there's no discussion about coming back at this moment.
Other sources confirm that the idea of voting on a pay raise this month has been actively discussed. Lawmakers' current base pay is considered a healthy salary in upstate regions, but in New York City and its surrounding suburbs, the cost of living is considerably higher and the money does not go as far. New York City council members, for instance, earn closer to $150,000 a year. In the past, governors have often put up roadblocks to lawmakers seeking to vote for a pay raise or demanded something they wanted in return. This time, Governor Kathy Hochul, though, is not objecting to the idea.
I believe they deserve a pay raise. They work extraordinarily hard. It's a year-round job. I've been with them many times in their districts, and they work very hard and they deserve it.
In 1998, former Governor George Pataki agreed to a pay raise for lawmakers from $57,500 to $79,500. In exchange, he got a significant expansion of charter schools in the state. That deal also docked legislators' pay whenever the state budget was late, though they would receive their full pay back once the spending plan was finished. Former Governor Andrew Cuomo also objected to a salary increase for lawmakers. That disagreement led to the formation of the Pay Commission to make those decisions. Cuomo also sought to strictly limit lawmakers' outside income after several legislative leaders were convicted of crimes related to outside jobs that they held. But the court struck down that provision as well. Hochul says ultimately she's leaving the decision to senators and assembly members to make.
It is up to them whether or not they want to come back and make that effective.
Pay increases approved in the past have also extended to the governor and other statewide office holders. Republican legislative leaders, who are in the minority party in both houses, say there should not be a special session on pay raises unless lawmakers also address some recent controversial criminal justice laws, including the 2019 bail reform laws, which ended many forms of cash bail. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
A new poll shows New Yorkers think Governor Kathy Hochul has fallen short on several major policy goals she laid out for 2022. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas with that story.
The new Siena College poll finds a majority of voters say the Democrat hasn't accomplished key goals she set for her administration at the beginning of the year. Poll spokesman Steve Greenberg.
Back in January, Siena asked voters if they thought Governor Hochul would make progress on six of the goals she had outlined in her State of the State address, including making communities safer, enhancing trust in state government, transforming SUNY to be the envy of the nation, making New York a place that people want to live, not leave. So today, when we asked voters whether the Hochul administration did or did not make progress on these goals, voters give a resounding no. A majority or a strong plurality say she did not make progress on any of these issues. Fewer than one-third of voters say her administration made progress on any of the goals. Democrats, they were very optimistic back in January that she would make progress on all the goals. And today, on four of the goals, a plurality of Democrats think she made progress. On the other two, not so much. Republicans weren't optimistic she would make progress in January, and today, overwhelmingly, they say she didn't make progress on any of her goals. Independents also strongly say that no progress was made on any of the goals that Hochul set for herself.
Survey respondents continued to be concerned about the cost of living and crime. Key issues in Hochul's narrow victory over Long Island Republican Congressman Lee Zeldin in November. Nearly two-thirds of voters, 63%, say the cost of living should be one of the top two priorities for Hochul and legislators to address in 2023, followed by crime at 58%. Greenberg notes that crime and the cost of living are the top two priorities for Republicans, Democrats, independents, upstaters and downstaters, Black, Latino, and white voters. The survey shows Hochul has yet to find common ground with her constituents.
Currently, Kathy Hochul is viewed favorably by 45% of voters, unfavorably by 43% of voters. That 43% unfavorable rating is the highest it's ever been for Hochul. So her job approval, her favorability ratings are above water, barely. They're down a little bit from before Election Day.
Greenberg notes that in September 2021, Hochul's first month in office, 42% of voters viewed her favorably, so the numbers have remained fairly consistent. Greenberg says the tide has shifted for Zeldin, who is up 18 points from before the election.
Lee Zeldin emerged from Election Day with by far his best ever favorability rating. Right now, it's stronger than Hochul. 46% of New Yorkers view Zeldin favorably. Only 32% view him unfavorably.
Greenberg says that while voters think Hochul demonstrates honesty and integrity 44-36%, a year ago that margin was 56-22%. Last year, 68% of Democrats, 47% of independents, and 36% of Republicans said Hochul worked hard for New Yorkers. Today, those numbers are 66, 35, and 21%. Greenberg sees the new year as an opportunity for New York's first female governor.
Governor Hochul has a chance now with the upcoming State of the State address and budget and the new 2023 session to hit the reset button and try and reintroduce herself to voters outside of the messy midterm transition and the fiercely fought election.
Greenberg says political friends and foes alike will be watching Hochul's actions and words in the weeks and months ahead and how what she says and does impacts her standing with voters. WAMC has reached out to the Hochul administration and Congressman Zeldin's office for comment. There's more at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok this week spoke with Blair Horner, executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, about lawmakers' potential pay raise. Blair Horner says the key is banning outside compensation, which has long been seen as corruptive.
There was a commission that was created a few years ago that allowed for pay increases for the legislature for up to $130,000, which would make them the highest paid in the country. The commission was, the people who made that determination, of course, were directly appointed by the governor and the legislative leaders, and so they, you know, they are not, in our view, an independent body. Nevertheless, they made that decision, and they linked that pay raise to limits on outside income and a reduction in the number of available so-called LULUs, which is stipends that each of the committee chairs get. It was challenged in court, so they got their first pay raise up to $110,000. It was the first time they had a pay raise in about 20 years. But the next two phases, to increase it up to $130,000, were stopped due to the court case. And it also stopped the limit on outside income and the LULU ban. So the court ruled last month that they could go ahead with that. And so now there's all this noise and activity that lawmakers will return next week to have a special holiday bash to increase their salaries and may link it to limits on outside income. So I don't know if $130,000 is the right number because that will make them the highest paid in the country. But I think the New Yorkers should want an independent review of what the compensation should be, and it should go up or down depending on what the determination is. I don't know if they deserve to be the highest paid in the country, but they will be if the rumors turn out to be true.
So let me ask you this, Blair Horner. Who is against this pay raise?
Well, the Republicans seem to be making a lot of noise about it, although my guess is they probably secretly like it. Taxpayers are not thrilled. The reason that they do these pay raises, if it happens, in December is because it happens to be right after the election, and so New Yorkers get 2 years to cool off. And if they do it in December, it can be effective as of January. December of an even-numbered year, it can be effective that following January of the odd-numbered year. So it's effectively giving themselves a pay raise for next month. So the people that don't typically like it are the taxpayers, and there have been noises from the Republicans about these rumors.
Now, the governor, Governor Hochul, says she supports the pay raise. What do you make of that?
Well, it opens the door. That gives them cover. She's the highest paid governor in the country. And so maybe she thinks that the legislature should be the highest paid in the country, too. And her argument, and the public argument was, they work so hard and all that kind of stuff. Again, there's no way, in my opinion, that anyone can know what the right pay should be. But they are talking about bumping their salaries up to $130,000 a year. That's pretty good money. The governor's, saying that she supports it, basically opens the door to a holiday party.
Now, what's the role of the New York Public Interest Research Group in all of this, or NYPIRG?
Well, we have long argued that lawmakers shouldn't have outside jobs. And the reason is that, when you're a legislator, you're supposed to be looking out first and foremost for the public that's elected you to office. And if you have an outside job, that can create conflicts of interest. You're making money on the outside. Maybe the interests of wherever you're making the money run counter to the interests of the public. In Congress, there is a limit on outside income.
That's New York Public Interest Research Group Executive Director Blair Horner speaking with Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Capital Region Congressman Paul Tonko is pushing legislation that would crack down on Grinchbots, computer programs that automatically buy popular products, including the hottest holiday toys. More from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
The Stopping Grinchbots Act, named after Dr. Seuss's notorious Christmas-stealing character, is designed to halt the programs that can drive up the price of hard-to-find toys each December. Congressman Tonko stumped for the bill at Heroes Hideout, a collector's store at the Colony Center Mall in Colony.
You know, this manipulative effort to drive the prices upward and consume all of the maximum numbers that they can is very hurtful to the consumer and certainly hurtful to business.
The legislation is modeled after a law passed in 2016 to crack down on similar price gouging on concert tickets. The Democrat from New York's 20th District is on the Energy and Commerce Committee. He says the new bill would apply to more than just holiday presents.
The pandemic showed that bots can be quickly adapted to exploit any market inefficiency, with products including N95 masks and hand sanitizer being popular targets of bot attacks when supplies were low.
Grinch bots can make things difficult for retailers, especially those who stock collectible goods. Surrounded by rows of action figures, plush toys, and thousands of Funko Pop bobbleheads that resemble everything from Huckleberry Hound to Snoop Dogg, Heroes Hideout owner Steve Duckett said his business relies on collectors selling or trading their toys.
I have direct accounts with everybody. So everything from Funko, Hasbro, Mattel, everybody. Then what we do is we buy collections from customers who are looking to sell off their collections. That's really where we get affected, is because they paid a higher premium for an item that really probably isn't worth that much. So they expect that in return when they come to us.
According to Duckett, Grinch bots can affect customers' expectations and hurt his business's reputation.
Grinch bots aren't taking everything, but they're taking a lot. So unfortunately, if we have that item that they couldn't get, they think we participated, even though we didn't. So that's one thing we deal with. And then, like, it's an easy excuse, too, for the customer. So, like, they'll say if something goes online and they can't get it, oh, it was a bot.
Mark Egan, president of the Capital Region Chamber of Commerce, appeared alongside Duckett in support of the legislation.
This Christmas, vendors that use the Grinch bots should receive nothing other than coal in their stockings.
The bill has support in the Senate, too, including from Democratic Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York. In the meantime, Tonko has already written to the chair of the Federal Trade Commission, asking it to take additional steps to protect consumers from Grinch bots and to provide feedback to help inform members of Congress on ways to fine-tune the legislation.
Look, let's have a happy holiday season, and let's make certain the Grinch doesn't spoil any of that season, and that when children write their letter to Santa, that Santa can deliver.
Reporting in Colony, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina.
Oh, she's back. I'm speaking of Dr. Lynn Porodnik, medical marijuana doctor in New York State, joins us to talk about the status of the now legal industry that's moving forward. Welcome back, Lynn.
Thanks, David. It's a pleasure to be here. And these are quite interesting times. Before, we were in low gear, and now things are ramping up and changing every day as we speak.
No question about it. We have some licenses that have been issued, I believe near 40, somewhere in that range, right? Upper 30s, 37 maybe. And part of this law, of course, was to award licenses to those who had been, you know, unfairly burdened through the Rockefeller drug laws. And that's exactly what they've done. There's always been some changes there. Why don't you bring us up to date on the issue of licensing so that the recreational marijuana business in New York can begin?
Okay. So what we're kind of talking about is dispensary licensing. Now there's the whole rollout of the New York State Recreational Marijuana Program. We had over 200 cultivators growing cannabis this past summer. It was an excellent crop, as I've been told. Now we are going to have places to sell it. So this program is really set up to help disadvantaged people and having mom and pop shops. That's what New York State's goal is, and they also are really pushing social equity, people who have record for cannabis. So this first stage has been people who have been arrested, and there's two groups. There's the people who've been arrested Also, there's a group of not-for-profits who've been helping people when they get out of prison reintegrate into the world. So, for example, Housing Works. They have all kinds of programs. Everyone knows them from their good used furniture. They're going to be cannabis dealers. They have a license and they're going to be doing a dispensary. And there's a few others. So that's all part of this first rollout. Now, New York State had promised shop fronts for these applicants. The ones who won get shops. They get low interest loans. But the problem is New York did not acquire the shops. So this is really a first big change in that they will be able, as of last week, people who got those social equity licenses will be able to choose their own location. But now is a big problem because you have towns that opted in, opted out, licenses were awarded, but now you're dealing with real estate. So, for example, I have a friend who got a license in Southampton. He's been looking for a shop. He's a formerly incarcerated guy. People are not so excited to rent to him. So his job now is, besides trying to get this up and running, New York has said, oh, if you don't have a storefront, you can do delivery. So that's good. So on the back end, they're trying to get delivery and a food chain established, but they don't have a shop. And it's not so simple to find a shop to sell weed in Southampton. So he's looking frantically, and I'm sure he's not alone. There's also a court injunction in place. There's a group from Michigan who said they would have applied. They wanted shops in New York. This violates interstate commerce. So there are a bunch of counties that are on hold now, Westchester being one of them. Westchester and Brooklyn are both on hold until this is examined through the courts. What does it mean exactly? Nobody really knows because cannabis is still not federally legal. So how do we use these laws for legal things in the cannabis space? There's a group who they have convictions. They're in Michigan and they're saying because they're not New Yorkers, they don't have their convictions in New York. They're not being allowed to do this project. And that's what New York has told them. So now this is becoming a huge legal battle. So things are moving along.
Well, so moving along leads to the question. And I know many New Yorkers are wondering, how long before the first recreational cannabis store opens in New York?
Well, according to the state, by the end of the year, we only have 2 weeks left on our calendars, but these stores will be able to do delivery. So if they can get everything up and running, they can sell tomorrow. But there's a lot of work between now and the alleged tomorrow, and it seems like it's been discounted a little bit. You can't just open a shop when you don't have frontage. You can't just do delivery. Set it up without the regs. So now the regs are out, and that was a big advantage. So they're also saying in these regs, you can have a delivery service with bicycles, you can do mini bikes,
scooters,
cars. So it gets kind of interesting. There's a big change from the medical, because the medical, you had to have vehicles or a lot of lockup situations for products. So it's very different attitude with rec delivery.
Yeah, so that's where I was going. What does this mean for the medical part of things? The medical also wants to get hold of the recreational. I mean, most of the, for example, in Massachusetts, shops are both medical and recreational. And what does that mean for cost?
Well, okay, so back to the medical. The medical is having a tough time with this because it says in the regs they can't open their recreational shops till after all these new shops open. These medical dispensaries have been losing money month by month, and a lot of them are being sold because it's such a huge nut to crack, and they just have had enough. So the whole medical is basically up in the air at this point. There are deals that didn't go through. There are, like, strange deals, for example, Sean Combs with $183 million buying up bits and pieces from Columbia Care, Cresco. So we have that. Etain has changed hands to Riv Capital. Also, New York is saying that if the medical people have shops, anything in other states, they can't do rec in New York. So they're in a really tight spot what to do. Either sell off pieces or stay in the game. But the game has been really, really tough for them. They're also not allowed to sell their harvest to the social equity applicants. They have been producing, gearing up for rec, buying products from these new cultivators. There are contracts out there, but they are not allowed to sell to the social equity applicants.
Yeah, and I mean, this is somewhat shocking because you think about, I mean, again, the idea that it's medical, it's not recreational. As you've pointed out to us many times in interviews, there are people, including children, that marijuana works to help with medical problems. So it can't just go away, can it?
Well, New York is doing a really good job in closing them up, or wishing that they wish they were closed up. They're looking for solutions, but it's just becoming tougher and tougher. Now, if you go to Manhattan, there are all these storefronts selling cannabis that are not licensed, nicely decorated, like money's been put into the shops. They look lovely. Everybody's lovely in there. But this is not legal. So there's a lot going on, to be polite.
Dr. Lynn Porodnik on the Legislative Gazette this week. Thanks, Lynn.
Thanks, David.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's for program number 2250. Or just listen online at wamc.org or schedule a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.